the lottery. At least I don't think I will. My complete boredom and distaste for conventional forms of entertainment has pushed my intent to create content that uplifts and entertains me. But why not share it with the world? First, who is that girl in the big old truck? Oh yes, that's my truck, at least for the next 72 payments. In 2017, I picked up said truck in Texas. Shout out to Terry Hill, at that time at Autoflex Leasing. Bought a 30-year-old RV and pulled it to Oregon. Yes, child, the chick with the fro would camp across the US. I would visit lakes on top of extinct volcanoes with the clearest of blue waters. Search out waterfalls and chase the sun that had difficulty showing its face in that rainforest. Yes, less than 10 months later, I ran screaming back across the country, but not before hanging out in the Grand Canyon. I had to get home to a real house with four walls and my back porch. But all I want more than anything is to travel with true friends, go to football games, Cowboys for life, bitches, see the cherry blossoms, and surround myself with positivity. In the meantime, I have self-published my first book, Not My Family, and I want to see it reviewed in the New York Times Book Review. Yes, I think it's that good. And I'm working on my second book, based right here in Chattanooga, based on the premise, if I won the $1 billion lotto, what about Chattanooga? In the dirty or not so dirty in this case, or why in Chattanooga in general? No prize that large has ever been won in Tennessee. I have been given an extraordinary opportunity to do pretty ordinary work, and I love it. It's not lost on me that I will be able to afford chasing sunsets, following the cherry blossom blooms, and off to not so extinct volcanoes in the most exotic locales on the earth. Or just kick back on the greatest beaches on either coast of the United States. But I want to share that with, well, everyone. I'm the Ruth of podcasts, seeking a Boaz, male or female, individual or corporate, to support my mission to have a positive impact on this life and to encourage others. That was a biblical reference, but the theme of my podcast and even my blog does not have a particular religious bent. It's more contemplative. My hope is to spread the girl power heroine message because that message can't be told enough. It takes courage and a lot of hard work if you want to rewrite your life narrative. My inspiration is everything and everyone I see and meet in this life, but it takes time to develop, research, and publish next level content. It takes time and money because true quality comes at a price. That is why I want your support. So let's keep it going. See you at the next book fair.
God of glory, Lord of love, hearts unfold like flowers before thee, healthy as the sun above. Now the cloud of sin and sadness drive our darker down away. Giver of immortal hands, fill us with the light.
Fill us with the
light of day.
y'all, and welcome to another episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. Hi, I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. I do understand this has been a long time coming. I have not recorded in greater than 3 weeks, almost 3 weeks, so I need to get on it. I've been doing a lot of traveling. I've been down in Tennessee camping, well, my idea of camping, a couple of cabins. One at the Tim Ford State Park, and then again in Gatlinburg in celebration of a friend of mine's birthday. And then I ended, well, winter came in with a roar, and summer was abruptly ended when I actually had to store my RV for the season. It's actually, I discovered a campground right on the beach. It was wonderful. And I've written them all. I've written all about it, and here it goes. But anyways, this episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading is coming from my computer. I know, have computer, will travel, will write. I will present Black Excellence and National Cool with a discussion of, what is that? Celebrating Steve Reed of Montgomery, as well as other national cool figures. The invites and disinvites in the run-up to the 2020 elections. Ex-Mayor Bloomberg is throwing in his hat, and I don't blame him. And also, the ex-governor of Massachusetts is actually entering the race, too, because evidently the pickings are slim, and I tend to agree with that. I will be adding back in the medical minute. I just need to stop talking people to death and keep it short and succinct, as well as random-ish from all over the globe. Why I think Donald Trump and his son need to go and sit down somewhere. Why Queen Slim is going to be a great movie. And why I thought Dudley Moore was a douche in The Graduate. And then we'll do a literary roundup with a beginning of a playing of Robin Crawford's, yes, that Robin Crawford, the homegirl of Whitney Houston, her new book, my read, and then concluding with my affirmations. And again, thank you for joining me for this episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. So, welcome back to the podcast. I am tripping over the fact of how long it's taken me to do these podcasts, and I don't understand why I have not taken the lead or have tried to do something more with the podcast in the last couple of weeks, but I realized I've been doing a whole bunch of stuff, and I've been entertained by other means, but I'm back. And then I got into this thing where I started realizing, especially in the last, this past week, that I'm my own worst enemy. I finally have a position that I truly like, but I'm getting mad about stuff that I have no control over. Case in point, I think that I've become very more efficient in doing my job. So that allows me to review and make determinations faster. Well, it's a double-edged sword because not everybody is wired to do that. And I don't mind doing the work. And I didn't know, and I do know that my efforts were not going unnoticed. But I did take issue that I spent more time, I worked over weekends, and I'm putting in the work, but everybody else is allowed to take unscheduled PTO, take 2-3 hours off during the day. And then at 5 o'clock, when I'm supposed to be knocking off because I have something else to do that night, because I do have a life of sorts, I get told, oh yeah, there are more cases that have to be done because a whole bunch of late cases. And I know it's a lie because I know that I have my Skype set up just like everybody else. I know if you've been offline for 2-3 hours in the middle of the day. I also know that if I'm pounding and I'm doing 20, 40, 50% more than any other reviewer, what does that have to do with me? Just because no one else is doing their work, I need to be penalized and have to continue to put my life on hold and can't write, can't go anywhere because I have to be watching the queue and I've already finished my work. Probably already finished about 3 o'clock, like now. It's 3:39 and I'm way above the absolute top of what is expected for us to clear. And they're still adding stupid cases and I still have somebody that is taking her an average of 2.5 hours to clear a case. But what does it all have to do with me? I don't know. I'm just finding that the more I do, the more I get asked to do, and it's not fair. And it's getting old real, real fast. It's hard to want to walk away from a position that you actually don't mind and actually feel good about doing because you're actually good at and you get paid. But at the same time, who wants the hassle? So I don't know. I just have to get that rant off my chest. And I think people need to be cognizant that you can't keep treating people and expecting people to continue to do a whole bunch and there are no repercussions for people doing not doing their job. That I'll never understand. But way above my pay grade, I don't get paid for any of it. So basically, I'm going to tell everybody kick sun rocks, like I told that dude at the campground in Oregon. Kick sun rocks, that particular state's national state stone. But anyways, so on to Black excellence. This week, big ups to the new mayor-elect, Steve Reed of Montgomery, Alabama, the first Black person to be elected for that particular position, which cracks me up because I believe the population of Montgomery, Alabama has been 60 to 70% Black forever. And they're already asking him, is he going to run for president? No, you're not going to get another Barack Obama. I'm so sorry. But keep your eye on him. They said the same thing about Cory Booker, and he ended up being stupid. But anyways, on to, what did I call this section? And other random-ish. Let's see. The past couple of weeks since I have not posted have been just a hodgepodge of popular shenanigans. We've actually started the public browbeating for impeachment for Donald Trump. And his son are great fodder for just comments and memes. Just recently, Trump Jr. went on The View and completely made a jackass of himself, but they called him out on it. But you got to read this, or you got to see this on YouTube. I think it's classic. he basically perpetuated the idiocracy of his father and the rest of his goons, and I think it's classic. And they were just looking at him like he was crazy. But for the whole spiel, navigate to DalesAngelsInc.com, and it'll be on my this page's video. Will it be on this page of video? Sure. It'll be on this page's the podcast page video, as well as another page, the Uncool Chronicles. I have where I post things that I'm usually late to in popular culture. And I also wanted to bring up Queen Slim. It is a movie that is getting ready to come out November 27th, I believe. Written and directed by who wrote this? Written and directed.
Can I ask you something? What took you so long to respond to me? I sent you a very well-crafted message 3 weeks ago. And today, out of the blue, you hit me up asking if you want to grab dinner. What changed?
I didn't feel like being alone. Not tonight.
So you turned to Tinder. So what happens tonight?
Did you think we were going to have sex?
No. I thought we were going to hang out. Maybe get to know each other.
Phil, that's a good tourist signal back there.
Go ahead and actually step out of the vehicle for me.
Could you please hurry up?
What did you say?
It's just cold.
Get on the ground! Keep your hands on your cell!
Why is he under arrest? What is your badge number?
Chill! Just chill!
I'm reaching for my cell phone!
Now let's go.
Whether you're a brother or baby, you're a mother, you still
cop killers! Cop killers!
And this is written and directed by Melina Melonsakis and Lena Waite. Basically, yes, that was a gunshot, because this is a story, fictional story, chronicling the Black Bonnie and Clyde. Evidently, this particular trailer dropped back in July. And of course, I'm so late to the game, and it actually is going to premiere just in a couple of weeks. But this is one of those movies that I think that we all should actually consider. The negativity is that this guy was allegedly stopped. And of course, a stupid cop draws his gun. And this the Black guy, in defense of himself, of Get Out fame, that particular character, I believe his name is Daniel Kaluuya, and also of a fame on Black Panther. But he defends himself, shoots the cop, and they go on a cross-country run. And it portrays them as survivors, but they become folk heroes. I think it's, you can look at it both ways, as violent and a rage against inequities, and is also against police brutality. But I think it's also entertainment. It's kind of one of those pieces that's going to allow you to think. And so I'll probably continue to post on it just because of the Black characters and how realistic it is. It seems to be. I'm probably not going to go to opening night, but I'll probably, I write to the run-up to see it, I probably am not going to look at any other reviews or any other comments on it until I actually see it myself, because it has a potential to be, and it seems like it's going to be a great movie. So If I put any plugs for any movies, Queen and Slim is right up there. And it has a potential. I hope there has been some Oscar buzz, because more than anything, I think this movie, for whatever it is, could potentially get best movie. And that's just my 10 cents worth on that. Oh, yo, and I've completely forgot. This was also a week of watching movies and stuff on stuff that I can't even remember. Full cable at my house in North Carolina, but through Apple TV, I can basically take all of my channels, because everybody has an app, and if I sign in through my Spectrum North Carolina account, I can actually watch wherever. And in this respect, I was actually watching a couple of movies this past weekend when I was down in Myrtle Beach, and one of the movies that I couldn't remember if I actually had watched all the way to the end was The Graduate and Mrs. Robinson. I'm glad I watched it as an adult, because I didn't understand it, and I didn't realize that Dudley Moore was such a douche in this movie. It's all about this white dude, rich white family, graduates from college, and then basically bums around. But his father buys him a drop top red Alfa Romeo, I think, to basically tool around California while he finds himself. And then they couldn't understand why he wasn't finding himself, like finding a job or doing something with all the money that they paid for college education. He then has a torrid affair, and Bancroft looks like the bomb, but has a torrid affair with the Anne Bancroft, Mrs. Robinson character, then goes and hooks up with the daughter, says he's going to marry her, then the father runs him off. And that's where I fell asleep, and I have to finish watching that, but my perception on that movie was, why did he get all those Emmy nominations and win for Best Directing? Was it because it was so risque for its time? I do like the costume. I do like the barware, because everything in the 60s looked the bomb. But I thought that Anne Bancroft's character was a little bit vapid, and I couldn't stand her, but I thought she had balls. And I thought they were all entitled white people, and Dudley Moore was actually a douche. And I don't understand why it's such a classic. And again, why at that time it got all those nominations and awards. I just don't get it, but that's just me.
Penguin Random House Audio presents A Song for You, My Life with Whitney Houston. This is the author, Robin Crawford. To my mom, Janet, brother Marty, and sister Rabina, for your undying love, you are always with me. To the most amazing beings, my children, Jillian and Jeremy, you make every day entirely brighter. You are my greatest love of all. And finally, to my one and only, the one with whom I live adventurously, lay my head next to at night, and awaken to at daybreak. My endless love, Lisa. I still see your face from the first time we met, and I draped my scarf around your neck. You are everything. Introduction. Why now? Why did I make the decision to write this book when I could have remained silent for the rest of my days, keeping my memories all to myself? If you are a fan of Whitney Houston, you probably know my name. Google me and you'll see my face at events and my name in articles. Whitney and I met as teenagers and spent the next 22 years together as she became one of the most popular and beloved global artists of our generation. It was the relationship that would shape my young adult years professionally and personally. Ours is a story of loyalty and trust of two women who made a pact to protect and rely on each other. We shared a dream that became a journey, and that journey took us from East Orange, New Jersey, to New York City, and then around the world, meeting superstars and heads of state. This is a story of manipulation, control, hunger for power, inexperience, race, AIDS, mental illness, the pressure the entertainment industry places on women, the bonds of family, and the importance of putting oneself first.
So, what's going on with the 2020 Democratic nominations for president? Who is invited to the barbecue? Well, I don't know if I've posted since he actually dropped out of the election, but Beto O'Rourke and his cousin behind has actually dropped out. And then some surprising entrances have come up. Mayor or former mayor Michael Bloomberg, another billionaire, tossing in his hat, but he always throwing shade to the Republican Party as well as to his hood-like counterpart, the current occupant of the White House. And he hit it dead on the head in 2016 in his endorsement of Hillary Clinton when he said game recognizes game. And he felt that Donald Trump was a con artist, and he's still proving without a shadow of a doubt that he was. And the danger he's brought to, and precarious position he's brought our country to. And his kids are just like him. I just feel bad for all of them. Also, the former governor of Massachusetts has also now announced his candidacy too. His name is Deval Patrick, and that one should be interesting. And I did not know that he was actually the former counsel for Big Oil, as well as a representative, or was a consultant for one of the capital. Hedge funds, I think Bain Capital is its name. He represents, well, it's not like Bloomberg doesn't represent all things wealthy. He is a multi-billionaire and basically owns Bermuda. But both of them are kind of contra, or so different from the current candidates that's running the race. They truly well represent wealth, and tremendous wealth, and for that matter. And I'm not like Elizabeth Warren and the other socialists, Bernie Sanders, when I say that we should have an equal distribution of wealth, because I'm not a communist and definitely not a socialist. I just think we just need to remove the barriers that everyone should have an equal chance to increase their wealth. No, I don't think I would take a handout from Warren Buffett or even from Bloomberg. But if they're offering, I'm not going to decline it. But I just want an equal opportunity to increase my own personal wealth. So me and my infinite nerddom was able to set up multiple alerts using Google. One of the alerts, I've been following a certain story with the outbreak of Legionnaires' disease, most recent being two big outbreaks. One led to a shutting down temporarily of a Sheraton in Atlanta, and then another was tied to a hot tub display at the North Carolina State Fair. We've actually had a patient testing positive this past week, which was reported in the Baltimore Sun at one of Johns Hopkins hospitals, which I find fascinating. And wait a minute. Building a blah, 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 garrison to conduct annual Legionella testing. This is Wiesbaden. This is one of the army bases overseas in Wiesbaden, Germany. They actually conduct annual water testing for Legionella from November 12th through the 21st. And I think we in the United States should be following suit. There's also a report. This was recently also the Schomburg American Inn by Wyndham claims that he contracted Legionella there. This was Chicago, and the suit claims that American Inn managers were negligent and allowed unsafe conditions to exist, which led to this guy contracting the disease. Because there's routine, this is not such a common disease, and there's not routine testing for it. But with all this recent activity, you would think that there would be a change in the approach to it. There was also a vendor in East Texas for the East Texas State Fair that was also diagnosed with Legionnaires. And there's another outbreak associated with another state fair. I wonder, did they have some type of water ride or water display like they actually had in North Carolina? However, and I'm thinking that with these places, we've got to be very cognizant of these diseases, and they need to implement safety measures so there won't be any further outbreaks going forward. But you just always wonder. I think the news is just polluted with so many things, with the talk of the impeachment and the daily trials and the memes, and nobody's talking about a seriousness of this particular health crisis. And the other thing I wanted to update the listening audience of is vaping. A kid, let me see, where did I get that? A recent report showed a successful double lung transplant. I can't remember if this kid was in Illinois, that he actually had the acute respiratory distress associated with vaping. And it's basically he had what looked and appeared to be bronchiectasis that was completely self-inflicted, and he underwent that was tied back to vaping, and it and he had to go lung transplant. They think that vitamin E acetate, an additive to the bootleg cartridges, are what's associated with the lung damage that we're seeing in this particular illness. So more on that later. And also, it's just an update on what I do every single day. As my original rant at the beginning of the show was talking about, I am a part of the payer complex, commercial insurer. And one of the things that I noticed on my job is the lack of documentation, and it only agitates me, because in a different part of my life, I actually went on and participated in many installations of Cerner, and documentation was my Jewish. And it still bugs me that in this day and time that these people, hospitalists, internists, are trying to get away with one-liners for these complicated patients. And I'm still spending an inordinate or a large portion of my time telling them how they should document. And even if I didn't do the Cerner implementation, I know you have Epic, and I also know that you have smart phrases and templates, and y'all are still submitting these garbage notes, and you expect to get paid. You ain't getting paid. I'm hip to it. I know what your electronic medical record can do. You need to document, because if you don't document, it didn't happen, and we ain't gonna pay you. That's just the bottom line. Take that as you want to. You need to go back to medical school and go back to the days when you wrote those medical student notes and you had to go by system or go by problem and document your plan of care for what is ailing that patient, and also a plan and estimate of when they're getting ready to get the hell out and if they're not ready to get the hell out. Because I'm going to be able to read between the lines and know if you're BSing me. But I can't make any decisions if I don't have proper documentation. Your interpretation of the vital signs, imaging and labs, and what you plan on doing with it. That's what the insurer needs. And we listen to reason, just don't try to BS us. And that's how I'm going to end this section of Tennessee Minute. And that's how I'm going to be able to keep this shortened, because I'm only going to give you updates on what I've spoken about before. And again, those interesting things in the medical and science literature and news that I think you guys need to hear about and get my opinion on. Thanks. I love to read, obviously. Therefore, the Tennessee Fro is Reading podcast. But for those hard-to-find titles, navigate to alibris.com. Alibris.com is chock full of hundreds of thousands of titles at a reasonable cost. So navigate to alibris.com/TennesseeFro for those special deals. Plus, you can also navigate to DalesAngelsInc.com and check out updated daily deals at your pleasure. Now back to the podcast. She got that right. I was confused as to the why of the now of it all. And it goes without saying, without Whitney Houston, I don't think the average person would actually, outside of maybe basketball and women's basketball at that, we would absolutely know who Robin Crawford was. But I played you that riff because I was fascinated by several things. This woman spent almost 20 years as Whitney Houston's best friend, and everyone, the worst kept secret of the world, that they were absolutely lesbian lovers. And I don't care. And by mentioning that, I don't think it besmirches the memory of the late, great Whitney Houston. But at the same time, who cares? You know, and I think if you go on and listen to this book, it was more than that. And I only played you a small part of the audible version of the book. But I mean, or I wanted you guys to just to get a take of. The book came out, and she's actually the narrator of her own book. And I think this actually gave her more control because she controls the narrative. What I was also very fascinated about is after Whitney Houston died, she actually has had this amazing life with someone else. You know, she has two kids. She's in a long-term relationship with this lady, Lisa, I think is absolutely fascinating. That it's time. And I think the reason she probably figures that it's time because she still has control of narrative. Whitney Houston is still in the forefront of the psyche of anyone that has loved her music. And for us to hear about it, it can be exciting. I don't think it's probably going to clarify some of the more salacious points in Whitney Houston's life. But we already knew a lot about their relationship, as close as it was. But I think she also confirms that, number one, she could fight because she went to blows with Bobby Brown, who ain't no slouch and is a thug from the hood, but she can handle herself. That's just how she rolls. But at the same time, she also has led a fascinating life in spite of her close proximity to Bobby Brown, Whitney Houston, and the whole Houston family, which I find fascinating. And it's heartfelt and it's absolutely true. She basically is going to reaffirm that Whitney Houston was more than this goddess in the evening dresses. She, after with Robin evidently's guidance, she was more of jeans, t-shirts, and jeans and tennis shoes person. That's what she was most comfortable in. And I think it is making me want to listen and share with the audience more of this book because of that reason. It's not some type of semi-soft pornographic tract on Whitney Houston's life. We've had enough of that before she actually passed. This is a heartfelt memory or memoir from someone that was closest to her than anyone in the world, not as close as her daughter, her mom. This was someone that, with no shade, was actually close to this woman. And I want to hear, and I'm fascinated to hear of more of her take on Whitney Houston and their friendship.
Travels on to wherever she must. Her magic book of silver is her badge of plus. There are campfire legends that the plainsmen sing. Oh, but she calls westward Felicia, Felicia, where do you roam? Felicia, Felicia, far, far from home. Far, far from home.
That has become my theme song for my serial. Excuse me, called Westward Fro. I have been writing as a creator on vocal media for the last several weeks. You can navigate to vocal.media/wander/ the making of Westward Fro with the link will be in the episode notes, but this, my read for this week is from that selection.
And it starts out with a picture of the Aceta Head Lighthouse Bridge. One very misty morning, and you could actually see the dew and moisture rolling over the mountain. I actually flipped that into a moody looking black and white, which is the still that starts out the breed. And it starts like this. I captured my Oregon experience in a series of photographs and selfies with waterfalls. I hope to tell the story of each still in a continuous way, to connect each like a script for a movie reel or for a tour shoot, highlighting the possibilities and the contradictions held in one state. This story is a feast for the senses, foraging for ingredients at the farmer's market to prepare great food in my RV kitchen, walks to a restaurant specializing in gourmet offal. I hope my description of my white-knuckling crossing of many bridges to pass through primordial forests, paths less traveled accidentally, being led by Google to logging roads, the natural hot springs, spiritually guided walks, the gift of Japanese gardens or footpaths to inland seas at the top of dormant volcanoes, will encourage the reader's next big adventures. Yes, those different places and environments are still in Oregon. So many riches in just one state, right? I'm recounting my experiences in Oregon from the state-managed cabins at Tim Ford, and after my river walks in Gatlinburg with rooms with balconies over babbling creeks. Yet, I have written and edited this story to share later. But my experiences in Tennessee are my attempt to recreate my experiences in Oregon. I cross many creeks in Sislaw National Forest. These paths are enjoyed by the masses for free. There's a picture of a really babbling creek and a short stroll to the river, a real river walk, and near beautiful streams where it feels appropriate to lay down your burdens. The path through the forest led to more babbling brooks, which led to selfies with waterfalls. My path, either well marked or paths I created, would lead somewhere with varying results, never going to the same place twice. I always had a destination in mind, but my path led back to some body of water. And then the next section, it says, it cooked like you give a fuck. Besides crossing brooks and waters along beaches, one of my favorite pastimes was to haunt my favorite farmer's market, never limited by exotic ingredients or missing my favorite foods. Fresh seafood was the best in the country, and folks in Oregon love their pork, and in particular salted pork. I was never without smoked ham hocks and pork jowl at Fred Meyer's, but on a good day, local farmers would also bring their own seasoned meats and dressed poultry to the market. One of my prize gifts was from an East Coast bestie, Thug Kitchen, with recipes easily prepared in my RV kitchen. I would follow the recipe expertly, in my opinion anyways, for grilled eggplant and soba. Thankful I had a real kitchen in my RV and I had found all the vegetables in the farmer's market. And also on this run for soba and grease, I would be introduced to broccolini at the local farmer's market and grill up steak and portobello mushrooms. I found kohlrabi at the same farmer's market in Coos Bay, paired it with some tender and perfectly seasoned short ribs. I also prepared amazing sweet things with fresh picked blackberries, sweet cream, and pound cake. But I would learn to stuff peppers, prepare chicken corn chowder, and seared cod. Some find you have to acquire a taste like bitter melon, salted with sea salt, dill, smoked paprika, crushed red peppers. There are many other treats I ate before I could take the picture. However, the bottom line is, don't limit your taste and culinary experience to fast food and pizza. A farmer's market that represented the taste of so many Pacific Rim nationalities, a great cookbook, thanks Janelle, my friend, a wild taste palette, and a daringness to try new things. You can travel the world from your RV's kitchen. Bridges everywhere. As a height fearing person, I consider the crossing of these high and swing bridges a feat of engineering, but was also gut wrenchingly scary to me. These bridges have a purpose to provide access to remote areas, connecting communities in desperate parts of the state. Bridges are necessary to connect every desperate state to major cities like Salem and Portland. And I did put a picture of one of the bridges from North Bend that you can see from North Bend. To shopping, to mountains, to desert plain, to rainforest, to Pacific coast. The bridges are connections to all things Oregon, to be crossed, to experience it all. Bridges connect disparate places, bridges for obstacles like monstrous rivers and rapids. They connect people to resources not available where they are. And Portlandia is for real, y'all. I experienced all places in Oregon through as many culinary treats, either personally prepared or picked up in its noodle shops, food truck, and Japanese counters. I experienced places visually, thus an extensive archive of pictures and through my taste buds. The best sushi on the planet and pho for days was in Portland, Oregon. One of my best friends, Cheryl, would assist me in exploring all culinary things Portland with the stop at Jackrabbit, the Ophel gourmet specialist. Start with charcuterie, locally sourced meats, and bread baked on site. I would experience deviled duck eggs and pork rind, locally sourced beef, and of course pork with whole heads brought to your table. And of course, locally sourced jackrabbit, which I have no pictures of because no one was brave enough to order it while we were there. The massive Texas donuts at Voodoo Donuts. When you have a rich marijuana culture, you have to have quality food to satisfy even the highest sweet tooth. I spent enjoyable afternoons strolling through the Japanese gardens to provide a healing space our citizens interred during the World War II, and also a dedication to survivors of Hiroshima. We bombed the heck out of them, and they would come here and give us the gift of these beautiful gardens. I'd stroll across bridges spanning over babbling streams, my path lit by sunlight streaming through the trees. I took this shot when I was turned back and angled my phone at the perfect moment. Yes, most of my pictures were actually taken from my iPhone. Big ups to Steve Jobs. My steps were and still are ordered by a higher power. I would follow a path to the on-site Umami, which is a Japanese cafe. I had great snacks. There is very little known inland sea that was made by filling of a volcano right in the southwestern part of Oregon called Crater Lake. So it's been over 5,000 years since there has been a major eruption of a volcano called Mazama. And the last major recordable earthquake was back in 2015, but there is still some seismic activity along a minor fault in the area, according to the Geological Survey in Vancouver, Washington. The filling of the Mazama Dome with water makes this the deepest lake in the United States at 1,949 feet, and it does comprise of what they call the Ring of Fire, countries at higher risk of being struck by an earthquake due to their proximity to the fault. You can hike the Woodcroft Trail to get to the beach, take a swim in the crater, or take the ferry across. I never did that because it would require a hike back up and out, which I was not doing. Maybe next time. No matter which way you go, the view is electric, the air is so crisp and refreshing. This is one of the few times I would break camp at the Mill RV Park and Casino, pull my RV to camp at the Crater Lake Campground and RV park. No pictures to celebrate that camping experience. The groundskeeper was less than accommodating. I'm not a typical camper, thus the name Westward Fro, because I was different. I guess it evokes suspicion and hostility. Our beef started with my phobia being poisoned with water. I don't trust any water source where the logging industry ran roughshod over the forest for centuries. But the water filter I had created a bottleneck in the system that leaked, and the pump made lots of noise, which allowed him to reprimand me for daring to use the filter in the first place because the water, according to the scraggly beard keeper, was so pure. Nerds to that, excrement runs downhill, and heavy metals like mercury are forever. So you can only imagine the conversation going poorly really fast and ended up with me telling him to kick State Sunstone Rocks. But my choice not to be poisoned is my choice. Yes, I was gangster. Anyways, in Oregon. You don't always end up where you start. The trick is just to get going. I spent the vast majority of my time in Oregon what appeared to me to be a primordial rainforest, with day trips to wineries in the Columbia and Willamette Valleys. But I also traveled to the high desert to dig for state semi-precious sunstone. The Department of Interior did a very good job to allow visitors or residents to enjoy all the natural benefits of the state. If you don't like self-prospecting, a short trip to a store in Bend, Oregon, or purchase for delivery online. Sunstone is mined from shallow pits in Lake and Harney counties, where it flowed in lava flows millions of years ago. Native Americans value sunstone nuggets, trading them across Western America and using them in medicine wheel ceremonies. Sunstone has been found in burial sites and sacred bundles. The setting sun casts orange rays above basalt boulders at the edge of the Dust Devil Mine in Oregon's high desert. The mine is one of the region's most important commercial sunstone sources. Native Americans trade sunstone as far as British Columbia, the Mississippi Delta, big ups to my area, and they've been found in Viking burial grounds in the Northeast. Tiffany and Company of New York mined a clear feldspar here as a diamond substitute as recently as 1950s. Their endeavors led to the gem's local name, Plush Diamonds. My travel trailer served as a base camp for my big adventures in Oregon. I did not pull it to all these points east, west, north, and south because the strain on my truck axle as well as that of my 30-year rig caused both to be literally pulled apart. I had to make the effort to experience as much as I could of a state so naturally diverse. I was only limited by my own phobias and fears, but I worked hard to overcome them. No, I was not cavalier or unsafe. I had to plan and make sure my truck and RV were in working order. I did not want to be sidelined by preventable maintenance or lack of propane. I'm not particularly outdoorsy or a true naturalist. I consider my living in a remodeled camper as close to roughing it as I will get. Did you know that 97% of the country's landmass is considered rural, with less than 20% of the population living there? So many places to go, with the exception of a few forest rangers, no one else there ever has been there. So many places that are not privately held are open for exploration. What bridges or phobias have to be overcome or managed to get to your next big adventure? Where will you go? Wherever it is, have fun getting there. The next installment of Making of Westbrook Fro, in search of the perfect Pinot Noir of Oregon. And that's how I wanted to end this section or segment of the show, is that some of these is loosely based on a lot of my experience, and I've strung them together, not so much in sequence of them happening in Oregon, because I was truly limited by having to work and having to be present because I was a nocturnist. But this is hopefully a roadmap that will allow or encourage someone else to experience life just in general and just experience things right where they are. And I hope this provides enough positivity for people just to get moving, because that was my intent. And as if I can get as many people to read what I write, that's actually winning to me too. For this episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading, I'm hopeful that you will join me again soon for another episode of what I'm reading and what I'm thinking about. And I'm hopeful that it won't take me 2 weeks to actually post my next episode. However, I will be in New York for Thanksgiving, and I'm probably going to just postpone my posting at that time. So, you never know. And unless something happens that I just need to comment on sooner, But I'm living in the world. I'm a part of the world. And I know someone's going to do something stupid. That's just the way it goes, right? But don't forget to navigate to www.delsangelsinc.com for special offers and updates on nerd news. Drop me a line at tennesseefroiswreading@gmail.com or even leave a 2-minute voicemail at 423-463-0658. No trolley messages, please. Your comments may actually be read or played during the podcast. Also, if you like what you're hearing and tired of freeloading, become a patron through Podbean or just put 5 on it and leave me a tip at paypal.me/FeliciaDAI. And my affirmation for today, I can't win them all. I'm just hopeful that like-spirited folks will find my work and will vibe with it. That is Humble the Poet from Unlearn. Thank you for joining me for this episode. And as always, keep reading.